Let's get started then. So just really quick introductions. My name is Stephen Cleary, obviously, MVP. Our moderator today is Vidya, and he also we both have websites and Twitter accounts. I work for a company called Confluence in Pennsylvania, and I live in Michigan. And Vidya's a .NET consultant out of Seattle, Washington. I also have a concurrency and C Sharp cookbook that I've written, which is not really what this presentation is directly about, but it covers async and await and several other things as well. So about this presentation, there's only going to be a few slides right in the very beginning. Please do ask any questions. Just type them into the messaging window in your display there, and Vidya is going to coordinate with those. And please do ask questions. I actually can direct this presentation based on those questions. So whatever you want, this is going to be a lot of live coding, showing examples, a lot of how to think about async and await in modern code. Oh, and I also have a secret goal to try to kill this event stream feed with too many viewers. So, go out on Twitter and tell everybody that you're in this totally awesome presentation by this real radical dude, or whatever the equivalent is for your generation. So, getting started, I'd like to talk a little bit about terminology. I've got like two or three intro slides before we jump into the code here, and just want to show how this fits in with a few other mental models. Talking about concurrency, where I talk about when I say the word concurrent, I mean anything happening where you have more than one thing happening at a time. And so this slide here is how I use concurrent technology or current terminology. It's not any kind of a standard, but this is just these are just the terms that I use. So on the right-hand side of this slide, we have a lot of things. This is what we normally think of when we think of concurrency. We think of multi-threading, we think of parallel computation, those kind of things. Those are great if you're doing a lot of CPU bound processing, if you've got a lot of computation you need to do. But these days, most code is not really doing that. We're more on the left-hand side of this slide, where you've got reactive programming, if you've ever used the reactive extensions library, that's a great library for that. And kind of as a subset of reactive programming, we have asynchrony or asynchronous programming. And that's what we're looking at today with the async and await keywords, where a lot of our work is more IO bound. And we see that a lot today and more. When we do any kind of cloud first or mobile first development, async and await is really the default choice these days. The reasons for that is because there's some benefits that async and await provide to regular code. On the client side, so this is anything on the desktop, anything with a user interface, anything on your mobile device, we can provide responsiveness. Asynchrony brings better responsiveness by freeing up the user interface thread. It so instead of if we're downloading some resource from the internet, we don't have to block the user interface thread, waiting for that download to complete and preventing the user from doing anything else. Instead, we can say, "Well, start this HTTP download or whatever, and let me know when it completes." And in the meantime, I'm going to free up that user interface thread to handle other user interface events. So we have responsiveness, end user responsiveness on the client side by freeing up the user interface thread. And on the server side, async and await is also usable in many situations, not in every situation, but in many situations, it enables us to get better scalability because when we have, like, say, an ASP.NET request coming in, ASP.NET grabs a thread from the thread pool to handle that request, and it has to say, go out to some backend service, some web API service, Azure table, what have you, to satisfy that request. well, there's no point in blocking that thread on that I/O operation. Async and await gives us a way to start that I/O operation and then free up that request thread. And what that does is it gives us better scalability on the server side because we can handle more requests with fewer threads. That's true if your backend is scalable. You know, there's a common problem where if you just have like a single instance of SQL Server on the backend, well, you can't really use async and await to scale your web server because your SQL Server is going to be your bottleneck. So, but in many cases, like in cloud programming, async and await gives you some real scalability on the server side. So these are the primary benefits of asynchrony. Why is it so popular? Why is everybody using it these days? It's for one of these two reasons. And both of these have something in common. If you look at the second point on these slides, on the client side, we're freeing up the user interface thread. On the server side, we're freeing up the request thread. And that brings us to firing down our first common misconception with async and await. A lot of developers, when they first come into async and await, and they're looking at this and they're thinking, well, this is firing off, you know, background threads behind the scenes. And actually, that's completely not true. It's the opposite of that. The entire point of async and await is to actually free up threads. It does not use any kind of thread pool thread behind the scenes. Now, that's true for modern async and await code. And when I use the term asynchrony, this is what I always mean. It's freeing up the current thread. That's not the case if you look at when some people talk about asynchronous code, they actually mean running something on a background thread. A notable example is in the MSDN documentation. If you look for asynchronous delegates, what it means by that is actually running delegates on the background thread. So that's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about asynchrony. There's a bit of inconsistent terminology there. So let's jump right into the demo here and look at some async and await code. And I want to talk about how to think about this async and await code. First off, I'm going to introduce a couple of types here. This is the task type and the task of string type. And what I'm doing here is I'm creating one task that is just going to wait for 2 seconds. You can think of I'm calling this method here task.delay, and that is the asynchronous equivalent of thread.sleep. That's how you can think of that. So what this is actually doing is it's creating a task that completes in 2 seconds. Every task completes in the future. So it's like a future type or a promise type, if you're familiar with that from JavaScript. It's similar to a promise. So this task, when we first get this task back, this delay task, it's going to complete 2 seconds into the future. And it has no result, it's just a plain task. Now here's, down here, I'm creating another task, a download task. And I'm using this type called HTTP client. This is kind of like a more modern version of web client or HTTP web request with a nicer, more modern API. So that's the type that I'm using here. And it's available in a NuGet package. So I'm just newing up this HTTP client. And then I call this get string async, which does an HTTP get. And it returns the results at the HTML that would come back as a string. So in this case, what I'm starting here is this download task then represents an HTTP download that results in a string. Eventually, I will get a task. So this task of string represents a task that this object represents a string that I will get in the future. So I have here two different tasks. One task that just delays for 2 seconds, and another task that downloads a string. And both of these tasks return in the future. And the one here has a result value, the other one does not. So this is the basics behind the task type. Now, tasks can complete in a few different ways. They can complete normally, which, you know, is your common happy path. This delay task is going to complete in 2 seconds normally. This download task is a little bit more complex. There's some things that could go wrong here. You know, I could lose my internet connection. And, you know, so this download task could complete normally with a string representing the HTML, or it could also complete with an error. And in that case, there will be an exception placed on this task. So tasks represent some operation that's going to complete in the future. It may or may not have a result. We have one example here with a result and one example without. And they may complete successfully, or they may complete with an exception. So they just represent some kind of a future operation completing. The other important thing that I want to point out here is that when we call this task.delay, it returns by convention a task that's already started. So by the time I'm assigning this variable, you know, that 2 second timer in the background is already running. And when I get this download task back and I assign it into this variable, that HTTP request has already been sent. So this get string async actually sends the HTTP request. And then when it comes back, it's going to complete this task with the results. So when we get those task variables, they're already running. And the other thing to point out is that both of these tasks are threadless. There was a comment brought out that there's no real difference between asynchronous and multi-threaded programming because it's all just multi-threaded programming, which I disagree with. This is an example here where both of these tasks do not represent threads. There's no thread running this code. For this task.delay here, when it delays for 2 seconds, there's no thread in the background sleeping for 2 seconds to accomplish this. It is actually starting a timer, and when that timer goes off 2 seconds later, then it will complete this task. And with this download task, this method here sends the HTTP request, and there's no thread waiting for that result to come back. Instead, it wires up callbacks so that when that result comes back from the network, it will eventually complete this download task with the result. So these are the entire point of asynchronous programming, especially around input and output. But the entire point around asynchronous programming is that there is no thread. These tasks are both threadless. The one represents a timer, the other one represents a network request. Neither of those actually require threads, and neither of these tasks actually use threads under the covers. So that's the first mental step. And if you've used tasks in the past, like with task parallel library, if you've done parallel programming with tasks, you've done dynamic task parallelism, it helps to actually step away from that and say, okay, forget everything that I know about tasks, because how tasks are used in parallel programming is completely different how tasks are used in async and await. Even though it's the same actual type, they're both the same actual task type. So both of these tasks do not represent threads. They represent more like a callback. Both of these tasks have already started by the time we get these instances, these task instances. Those tasks have already started. They're already going. It's also possible that they have already completed. This download task, for example, if I'm on a really fast internet connection, or if I'm, say, hosting example.com, you know, it's quite possible that by the time I get to this next line here, the download task is already completed. That's especially true if you're stepping through it in the debugger. So that's something to keep in mind as well. You know, maybe the task is already completed. It is asynchronous in that way. So let's talk a little bit about the async and await keywords. We've talked about task. This is like an introduction to the task type first, because async and await are really tightly bound up with the task type. You don't have to use them with a task type, but most of the time you do. So I'm going to copy here a little method. I'm just going to, I took the task.delay here, and this is the same thing. This 2,000 milliseconds here is the same as the time span from seconds to. So I'm using the same task here, but I'm awaiting it this time. And I'm awaiting it within an async method. So I'm using a couple of new keywords here, async and await. I'm going to talk a little bit about, what those keywords actually mean. First off, async. The async keyword goes onto a method implementation, and it does two important things. The first thing is that it enables the await keyword for that method. If I didn't have async here, then I wouldn't be able to do await down here. So the first thing is it enables that await keyword. And the second thing is that it transforms this method into a state machine. And the details of that transformation, it works very similar to the yield keyword, if you've used a yield return to create an enumerator block. The transformation is conceptually similar to that. It's a little bit more complicated, but it's conceptually similar to that. And the details of that transformation, I'm not going to get into, but it's important mentally to be aware that there is a transformation going on. John Skeet has a great blog post series called EduAsync, it's EduAsync, that goes into all the details of that state machine transformation. Which is interesting reading, but not really necessary to know if you're gonna use async and await. If you really want to get into it, though, that's the best resource for that. And that's all that the async operator does, or keyword does. The async keyword just enables the await keyword, and it installs this state machine here. It's important to note that it does not run something on a background thread. It's a common assumption that people new to async and await make. It does not run this do work async onto a background thread. All it does is enable the await keyword and enables the await keyword and do that transform with that state machine. So let's move on to that await keyword. This is really the more interesting of the two. It's the one that does all the asynchronous work. The await keyword is like a unary operator. So it's kind of like a cast. You know, we've all used casts to cast types of, or values of one type to another. If we've got a double value, then we can say like that. And we all understand that this cast operator takes a single argument, an instance of another type, and converts it via that cast. Well, await is kind of like a cast, only it does more complicated things. But the idea here is that await takes a single instance. So this code is exactly the same as this code. I can create a task variable, save that task.delay, just like we were doing down here, and doing the same exact thing up here. I'm going to save it into a task variable, and then I'm going to await that task. So this code here is doing the same exact thing as the code that I commented out here. This is another important conceptual idea. We talk a lot, if you talk to people about async and await, you know, the common terminology is to say, well, I'm going to await this method. And that's the way that we normally write it. We normally write it like that. But in reality, what's actually going on under the covers is we're calling that method first, we're getting a task back, and then we await that task. Okay. So it's important to note, I think, that the await keyword, the await keyword operates on an instance of a task. And technically, the await keyword can work with other things too. I'm just using tasks in this session, but if you're, say, on a Windows Store project. They have a different type of awaitable. You can also await reactive extensions, observables, things like that. So you can await other things. It's not just tasks, but most of the time you're going to be awaiting tasks. So let's talk a little bit about how await and async affect how the code executes. Asynchronous methods start running synchronously. They don't jump threads or anything. They just start working right on that same thread that they're called on. And it's not until they hit an await where things can start to get asynchronous. And they don't always, but they can become asynchronous. So I'm actually going to break that code up again, just for clarity here. So this method is called synchronously. Why don't we go ahead and call it? So I'm just going to make this one async so I can call await do work async. So when this button one click event happens, I'm going to call into this asynchronous method, which I wrote. And this asynchronous method is first going to add an item to the list box items. I should show that first. This is a very simple kind of shell application that I'm using. I've got three buttons and a list box, and that's it. It's a standard WPF, but the same principles apply to Windows Forms, any other kind of user interface scenario. And most of the stuff that we're looking at also applies to server applications, ASP.NET as well. So I'm calling this from this click event, and I'm awaiting it. And when this method first starts executing, it starts off executing synchronously, just like every other async method. So this listbox.items, it can do this because it's on the user interface thread. I'm calling it from the user interface thread here, and I call right into this method, and I can access this user interface object because I'm still on the user interface thread. And then when I come down here, I ask this method to start a timer for 2 seconds, return me this task that completes when that timer goes off. And then I'm going to await this task. And this await point is what I want to start looking at here for a little bit. We'll talk about what the await operator actually does. When this await is hit, it first examines its awaitable. It looks at the task here, and it says, is this task already completed? If it is already complete, then this await just extracts the result of that task, and then it continues executing synchronously. So if this, for example, was a very short delay, and this one is not, but if it was a very short delay, like 1 millisecond or something, and this task was already completed, then this method would continue executing synchronously. And it is actually possible for this entire async method to execute synchronously. That is an acceptable use case if all of your tasks complete very quickly. So first off, await doesn't necessarily mean asynchronous. It could actually run synchronously. So it's got that interesting little first check in there. If this is already complete, then just continue executing synchronously. But if it's not already complete, which is going to be the case in our example, if it's not already complete, then what it does is the await keyword then pauses this method. It sticks a bookmark right in here, almost like a breakpoint. Sticks a bookmark right in there, and it says, when you complete, Mr. Task, when you complete, I want you to continue executing this method at this point from here on. And the very first time that this happens in an async method, it then returns an incomplete task to its caller. So let's break this one up here too. So let's walk through this. When this click event happens, it's going to call into this method synchronously. There's no asynchronous part yet here. It's going to call into this method synchronously. It's going to call down through here. It'll call into task.delay, get a task back that completes after 2 seconds. And then it's going to await that task. It'll first examine this task and say, are you done? Are you already completed? And the test says, no, I'm not done for almost two more seconds. So then this await operator is going to say, all right, call me back when you complete. When you complete, resume this method executing right here. And in the meantime, I'm going to return an incomplete task to my caller. So at that point, this method actually returns a task that is not complete. And then this method says, all right, I'm going into my await, and I'm going to wait on this task. Are you complete, Mr. Task? And the task says, no. Then this method also says, all right, call me back when you're done, and it returns to its caller. So that's the idea of how await works. And then when that task completes later, it will resume this method. This asynchronous method resumes executing when that task completes as a callback. And that finishes its execution. And when it reaches the end of the method here, then it completes this task. And then this method continues executing. It's a little bit convoluted to get your mind around the first time. But the idea is this task instance is created for you by the state machine for that async keyword. And that task then represents the method. So that when we call this method, this task represents the execution of this method. When the method completes, then the task is completed. And if the method returns a value, this one doesn't, but if the method returns a value, then that returned value becomes the task's result. So if I were to do this, then at this point, this return statement is going to complete this task with that value of 13. And then we can get that value out here from that task by using await. And also, if the method raises an exception, then the await will actually raise that exception, because the exception will be captured, placed on the task, and then the await will raise that. So why don't we walk through this a little bit in the debugger, and I'll show this a little bit more. Let me step in there. So I'm going to run here, hit the button, get rid of these windows. So I jumped into this button one click event. I'm going to step into this asynchronous method. And the very first thing it does is it adds something to the list box, and we can see that in a moment. And then it starts off this task. This task is not complete. It's still in the waiting for activation status. And then when it goes into that await, well, now it's complete because I'm stepping through to the debugger. So in this case, it's running synchronously. And then when it returns this value, it's actually returning, it's completing this task down here. So let me see if I can do something better. So let's see, I'm going to do the, I'm just going to add the result of this, this task to that list box so we can see it coming back here. Now when I run this, you can see, hi, it waits for 2 seconds, and then it comes back and resumes that method. It's still there. It returns the value, which is then seen by the caller and placed in the list box as well. So this is the general idea of how async and await work along with tasks. Okay. The other thing that I mentioned was that task exceptions are also observed. So if we did something like, say, throw an exception here, and I'm going to make this an invalid operation exception, just to show off a little bit of what async can do here. In this case, we have an asynchronous work that's going to throw an exception. This is perfectly normal in asynchronous code. In fact, exceptions, if anything, are even more common. A lot of times when you're dealing with async and await, you're dealing with IO, which is inherently unpredictable. So you always have to be ready for exceptions. And in this case, let's change this back so we don't have that return type on there. Okay, so in this case, I'm going to catch the exception. And I'm going to write it to the list box. I'm going to not do anything else. All right. So in this case, my button click event handler is going to call this method, await the task within a try block. And then we're going to catch the exception directly. And in fact, I'm going to make this invalid operation exception. So we can catch this exception strongly typed from an asynchronous method, just like you would do with synchronous code. It'll work exactly the same. So it'll say, hi, it waits for 2 seconds. It says, still here, throws the exception. And at this case, or at this time, the exception is captured by that state machine, placed on the returned task, and then when we await that task, it re-raises that exception, and then we get that strongly typed exception, and we can add it to our list box. And it's important to note that it is actually placed on the task. So if we move this up here, now I'm calling this do work async outside of my try block. And in this case, it'll call into this asynchronous method. It'll start executing it synchronously, and when it throws that exception, that will still get captured and put on the task. And if we don't observe it through an await, we're not going to see that exception. The exception is observed when we await, not when we call the method, but when we await the task. You see, hi, 2 seconds later, and then it catches that exception. It's still catching that exception in this catch blocks. Even though we're just awaiting the task, we're not calling the method within that try block. The reason is that this task represents this asynchronous method, the execution of this asynchronous method. When this method completes, this task completes. If this method returns a value, this task gets a resulting value. If this method throws an exception, this task gets an exception placed on it. So it's all about the task. That task represents the method. So let's talk a little bit more about how await resumes that method. Now you may have noted, okay, it makes sense, you know, to come in here, it starts executing synchronously, we're still on the user interface thread, we can access this list box dot items, that makes sense. But what about this one? I mean, what's happening here? How can we do that? And that's what we're going to talk about right now. The way that await works is when it pauses the method, it captures a context and uses that context to resume the method. Let's talk about that a little bit more in detail. In this case, we're getting a task back from task.delay that it'll complete in 2 seconds. It'll complete based off of a system timer. That'll go off and complete this task. And then we're registering, this await keyword will register the continuation of this method. So it'll resume like after this kind of bookmark, this breakpoint. It'll resume after that bookmark. But it also captures a context. Await captures this context that says, I want you to resume it, but not just resume it on a background thread. I want you to resume it in this context. Now, normally, the context is a user interface context, or an ASP.NET request context, or the Threadpool context. Threadpool is kind of like a catch-all. If there's no other context, then it'll resume this method on a Threadpool thread. But that's actually more the rare case. Usually, you're either in a user interface context or an ASP.NET request context. In this case, we're obviously on a user interface thread. So this await operator will capture the user interface context and then say, when this task completes, I want you to resume this method in this context, actually on this user interface thread. So when this task completes, then it schedules the remainder of this method back to the user interface thread. And that's why we can do things like access listbox.items in here without having a cross-thread exception thrown at us. So normally the context is either a user interface context if you're doing mobile development or desktop development. It's an ASP.NET request context if you're on the server side. Technically speaking, the context is the current synchronization context. Or if it's if synchronization context.current is null, then it's the current task scheduler. So that's what the context actually is, but in reality, it's usually just the user interface thread or the ASP.NET request context. And ASP.NET request context is a little unusual. It includes things like HTTP context.current, the identity, the culture of the page, that kind of thing. The ASP.NET request context is not tied to a specific thread like the user interface context is. It is possible to resume, if this was an ASP.NET app, it would be possible to resume this method on a different thread, but still have a valid HTTP context.current. It would still be the same. So just to keep that in mind, that the ASP.NET request context can jump threads, and actually with ASP.NET vNext, they're getting rid of the request context completely, which is a great move. So hopefully in the near future, we won't have to worry about the ASP.NET request context at all. But in this example, and if you're doing any kind of desktop or mobile development, you're usually in a user interface context when you're doing async and await, and this will resume on the user interface thread. So it actually frees up the user interface thread for that 2 seconds. And when we actually run this, and actually demo that, so when we actually run this, for those 2 seconds, this user interface is fully responsive. It's responding to my clicks and input and everything. So we've talked a little bit about what the async keyword does. It enables the await keyword. It does that state machine transformation. It builds a task for you that represents the execution of this method. The await keyword first checks to see if its task is already completed. If it has, then it just continues executing synchronously. If it hasn't, then it'll pause the method and it'll tell that task, resume this method when you are complete, resume this method within this context, within the same context. And that's how async and await actually work. It's really just a much more convenient way of setting up some really complicated callbacks. So there are a few pitfalls that I want to point out. Jumping back to my slides here for just a second. There are two pitfalls that are really common. One is async void methods, and the other one is blocking on tasks. And we'll look at both of these in just a second here. The first one is async void methods. When we're looking at making something asynchronous, let's say that was started out as a synchronous method. And I'm going to say, okay, I've got some really difficult work to do in here. I'm going to do a thread.sleep for 2 seconds. You know, that's my, this is my, you know, HTTP download or whatever. This is the original, or like the synchronous equivalent of what I had up there before. And I could call it as such. I could just say do work. And in this case, we're going to block that user interface. You know, we're not responsive at all. I'm clicking around here and it's not doing anything until that 2 seconds is up and then both the messages show up and suddenly my form's responsive again. So this is a common situation for a lot of desktop apps today. When we're making this asynchronous, we first want to say, okay, we want to make this, you know, task.delay. We want to do an await task.delay. And because we're using the await keyword, we have to add an async keyword up here. And sometimes this is a common mistake right here. When you make something asynchronous, you should also immediately give it a task return type. The problem with leaving this as void is that there's nothing returned that represents the execution of this method. Remember, when we have a task, that task represents the execution of this method. We can await the task down here to get whatever the results are, which is important at least for checking if there were any exceptions. But when this is void, there's no task. There's nothing to return here. It can't have a return type. There's no, what happens if I throw an exception in here? You know, what would happen there? And that is well defined. It will actually be raised in this case directly on the user interface thread's message pump, which is, you know, usually crashes your app, which is not really what you want. So as a general rule, you want to make these tasks. You always want to have your, you want to avoid async void. Async void is not unit testable. Async void is, it's not composable. You know, you can't have anything else say when this method is complete, if this was void, then there's no way to write anything that says, oh, when this method is complete, then do this other thing. Yeah. So they're not composable. They have odd exception handling rules. They're not unit testable. Just as a general rule, avoid async void. Now, it's interesting that I say this, of course, because you can see on my screen that I have async void right here. And I had it right since the very beginning. And that's true. The rule is async void is intended for event handlers. In an ideal world, this one would also be async task, but then it wouldn't actually match the button click event handler signature. So this one has to be async void. There's no way around that. So this is the kind of situation where, okay, you allow async void. And this is true for, you know, in a more realistic WPF app, say like your icommand.execute implementation has to be async void. You know, there's no way that if you have an asynchronous one, there's no way to do it with an async task. So avoid async void is a rule, unless it's an except, unless it's a, like an event handler or logically an event handler. And the other pitfall that we saw just briefly on the slides is that we don't want to block. We don't want to block on tasks. We don't want to ever, in our asynchronous code, we never want to call task.wait or task.result. And this often happens if you've got, again, like a synchronous code base and you're converting part of it to asynchronous, you want to try to kind of test it out. Well, let's see here. Okay, so I've got this task returning method now. I've made this asynchronous and it looks right to me. I'm good. And then I want to call it and say like this code is, you know, obviously in some business logic or something somewhere, and I say, I want to call this synchronously. I don't want to call it asynchronously. I can't make this method async. So I'm just going to call dot wait. I'm going to start this task and then I'm going to wait for it to complete, right? That's great. Works fine if you're in the task parallel library world, but this is exactly what you don't want to do in async and await. And the reason for this is a little bit more complicated. But if I click this button, in fact, this window locks up and never returns. I've completely lost control of my app here. It doesn't matter. Even after 2 seconds, it's not coming back. This is a deadlock. What's actually happening, and this is a little bit tricky for you, and it's a little bit tricky to think about, but the idea is that it's calling this doWork async method. It's coming in here, it's getting this task back that says, I'm going to complete in 2 seconds. It says, all right, are you done? No. And it says, all right, I'm going to schedule the remainder of this method. And when this task completes in 2 seconds, I want you to resume this method in this current context on the user interface thread. And the task says, okay, I will call you back on the user interface thread in 2 seconds. And then it returns an incomplete task to the caller. This method then takes that incomplete task and calls wait on it. And this is where the deadlock occurs. because we're blocking the user interface method. We're saying, I want you to wait until this method completes. But this method can never complete because it has to resume on the user interface thread, which is blocked waiting for that method to complete. So we've created a very common deadlock scenario here. That's common if you're like kind of touching your toes in the waters with async, you want to try it out, but you don't want to, you know, use async all the way through your app. Then a lot of people run into this problem. And the best way to avoid it is to actually go async all the way. You use a wait instead of dot wait or dot result. You really have to. If you want to, you know, test out async, do a little proof of concept or something, you really do have to create like a vertical partition in your code in order to really get a good feeling for it. Okay, so I'm going to take a couple questions here since we're at a good point for that. The syntax for async seems overly complex. Is there any way to simplify the async code, something like anonymous or arrow functions in JavaScript? Well, that's a good point. The idea behind async and await is to actually simplify that code. You can do it using callbacks or continuation passing style. And that's using the continue with method on the task. And what you have here is essentially what you would get with like JavaScript promise libraries for today. But actually, if you do any kind of real business logic or complicated code, you end up in with some real messy callback code. And actually, the JavaScript language is looking at adding async and await keywords so that they can get to the better to this syntax, which is actually simpler once you wrap your head around it. So Jan asked, what if you can't mark the method async void and need to synchronize async? Okay, so the question is, all right, I've got this situation where I can't, you know, I have to call it synchronously. And actually, my answer to that is rethink the problem. You know, take a step back and look at it at a more holistic view. Sometimes it requires a larger scale redesign. For example, if you're in a constructor, for example, constructors can't be async. I mean, when you new up an object, it has to be returned right away. So in a constructor, you can't call any asynchronous code. But in reality, if you need to do some kind of IO operation to create an object, a constructor is not what you should be using. You should be using like a factory type, you know, which can be asynchronous. Another common example is for user interface design. Whenever you start doing a lot of asynchronous code and you've got a user interface, if this had data that it was pulling from some, you know, web service or something, if this was pulling data from some web service, then I don't want to display it, you know, display my page until it gets here. But the whole idea behind a async is that it drives a much better user experience. So when the platform says, all right, give me what you want to display right now, we have to do that synchronously. We can't say, well, hold on, I'm going to wait for this web call to return. No, we have to display something. If it's a loading indicator or something like that, something in here, we have to respond immediately and then update this asynchronously, update our view asynchronously with the data as it is retrieved. So the best, I actually have a blog series where I talk about async and OOP, object-oriented programming, because a lot of times if you're looking at properties or constructors or events, you know, async doesn't really fit in great with those. And the idea is that, you know, sometimes properties really should be methods if they're doing asynchronous work. And so I have a whole series that goes into that. I try to cover a lot of really common cases, so just search for async OOP on Google.
Stephen, I'm just going to cut in really quick here and let our viewers know that we're going to start with some poll questions. So ladies and gentlemen, as we finish and Stephen answers some more of your questions, there'll be a poll slide up on the left-hand viewing area. Just click the radio button box and click submit. There'll be four of them. And Stephen, go ahead and continue with questions.
All right, sure thing. Let's see. Nick asks, how about waiting for multiple asynchronous methods before continuing execution in the main method? Yep, that's a great question. If we had, say, two different tasks here, and I'm going to, you know, asynchronously wait for 2 seconds twice, but both of these are going to be running concurrently, then I can wait for, or asynchronously wait for both of them to complete by using this task.whenAll, which is a method provided by the framework that allows you to wait for multiple tasks to complete instead of just one at a time. So asynchronous concurrency is actually really straightforward. You just have to capture them in tasks and then wait for them both. So when I run this button here, it'll actually only wait for 2 seconds before it shows the result. Okay, let's see. Do we have any other questions? Let me see. Okay, Vidya. Jan asks, in an override that needs to do stuff before it returns to the caller, async void may not work, so you can't rethink the strategy. Once again, you have to step back further and say, okay, if I have to do asynchronous work before I can return to the caller, I really need to be able to return task. And so the base method or the interface method in that case should be changed to return task instead of void. All right, Mike asks, how do you call an async method from console main? Okay, that's a good question. I said earlier, don't ever call dot wait, which is a slight simplification. I do call, I will do this in my console app main method, and that's it. Because in that particular case, you've got one thread. You have to block the thread. If the thread returns from main, the program exits. So you have to block the thread in that case. I will use dot wait in that one use case. But pretty much anywhere else, it's a recipe for pain. All right, Jeremy asks, do these async methods differ from using task.run or task.factory.start? Yes, absolutely. I think this is going to have to be the last question. I'm about out of time. But these are completely different from task.run or task.factory.start. Task.run is a way to execute code on a thread pool thread. So I can do this here and get a task back that represents this code here running on a background thread. These async methods do not run on background threads. They're the opposite of that. They're about freeing up the current thread. So when I run this method and I'm waiting for these tasks over here, none of this code runs on a background thread. It all runs on the user interface thread. So that's the primary difference there. Okay, one more question, they say. Santiago asks, what technology or keyword should I stop using and start using async and await? What should you stop using? Async and await, they make certain things more easy, like callbacks. If you go on MSDN, bring up my slide here real quickly. If you get any links from this, these are the ones to do. There's some great MSDN documentation on async and await under the task-based asynchronous pattern link. And the other question here, oh, but I can't make my caller async. This is a link to my blog series on that. But the MSDN documentation here on tap is excellent. There's also, right alongside these other this documentation right alongside it. There's documentation for some older patterns, the event-based asynchronous pattern, and the asynchronous programming model. And those are things that, you know, async and await really replaces. So I wouldn't write any new code following those patterns. The TAP is a much more modern approach. And with that, I gotta go. I am out of time, but I'd like to thank everyone for the questions, for coming, and thank you.